And it's the Fetch. As I triple task here. I'm not multitasking. I'm like triple tasking, quadruple tasking. let's see. Where is that darn thing here? It's one of these. I think it's that one. There you go. Hi. It's the Fetch, everybody. Inside the Eye Live. Intelligent media for the politically aware. Again, today's date is what? August 12th.
The 12th.
Yeah, August 12th, 2017. Our guest, Maryam Al-Fatah, I believe is her nom de guerre. And she has a website called Libya Against Superpower Media. She spent her life and childhood, I guess, in Libya. And she's here to discuss with us today some of the ongoings that led up and perhaps into the Libyan overthrow of the Gaddafi overthrow, I should say, and then on into some of the issues that we have going on today. First of all, it's Maryam. Am I correct on that one?
Yes, you are correct.
Thanks for inviting me.
Well, thanks for coming on your show.
Thanks for coming. It's a busy day today. We're flowing pretty fast. Guys, again, join us in the chat room, InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's InsideTheEyeLive.com. Click on the live chat button, and that will get you in the door there. Again, we'd like to repeat, we do have new phone call-in numbers. That's 1-323-275-1314. That's 1-323-275-1314. Remember, it is listener-sponsored and supported. So, guys, make your way to the donation site over there at freedomslips.com to help keep the network up and running. Hi, Maryam. Welcome to Inside the Ally. You're officially.
Hi.
You know, I was in, just to give you some insight, I've been living here in Jordan for 10 years, spent some time in Iraq, met the government, went to Saddam's house, know a lot of people in the royal palaces in the various areas here. And I remember the Libyan war. We covered the Libyan war a little bit because we had a lot of Libyans coming here. They managed somehow to dump like $400 million into the central bank here in Jordan, and that money disappeared like probably within 6 to 9 months, something like that. So I had a little bit of people tell me about what's going on in Libya, but to have you here is kind of fun because, you know, it's a topic we do cover a lot is the Middle East. But you grew up, I understand. Is that correct?
I was born and raised there in Libya, in Tripoli, actually. Libya... Let me say something about Jordan. The time in 2011, when Libyans came over, most of them were anti-Gaddafi.
That I believe. Actually,
quite a few of my relatives flew to Jordan and stayed there the whole time of the war because they were against him for whatever reason they thought they were, although they were working with the Gaddafi. And that's the funny thing is that a lot of Libyans who were anti-Gaddafi were working in the government or in national companies, which belonged to the Zamahiriya. And that surprised me a lot. It surprised me also a lot of my relatives that they were against him, although...
How about your dog? Was your dog a supporter or was your dog also against Gaddafi?
My dog was, she was a supporter.
Right?
I will try. She's
like,
a bit.
Give me food, huh?
No, she's already eaten, but she's jealous.
There you go. Now, where are you located right now? Just to give people
In Europe.
Are you in London? Where are you at?
In South Europe.
South. Okay, no problem.
Yeah.
But in the South. So basically, you grew up in Libya. When I understand that as you were a child, Gaddafi really wasn't in power yet. He came into power a few years later.
He came in power in 1969. Mm-hmm. At that time, I was 10 years old. I was already going to a private school in Libya. It was called Tripoli College. And then I stayed till 1971. Where the teachers, for whatever reason at that time, they had to leave because we had quite a lot of English teachers in that school, plus Arabic, of course. Mm-hmm. And then I went to the American Oil Company school for 1 year. And then I left for London, for England, rather. Went to a boarding school, finished there, went to college, went back to Libya around the early 80s.
How many youth like yourself found yourself leaving Libya and getting Western educations during this period?
Quite a lot, actually. Quite a lot. We were, let's put it this way, we were the lucky ones. My dad, even before Gaddafi, before the revolution, he was a businessman, a self-made businessman. He had the financing that he could send me to a private school in Libya. Till 1969, let me remind you that practically 80% of the population was illiterate.
And that's something Americans really don't grasp in the West here. Much of the Middle East, not just Libya, but really we're dealing with societies that were largely this Bedouin mindset
exactly.
generation and a half ago. Heck, you can still go to parts of Oman and still see the guys living in the tents with the camels and the goats out there and herding the goats, sometimes the goats right through the middle of downtown Oman here. And people really grasp that. The difficulty it is to raise a country from a Bedouin point of view to some type of semblance of modernity for whatever that means in a generation or two, and they think it's easy, and it's really not, is it?
It's not. I'll tell you a funny story. I was must have been about 8-9 years old, I think, and there was this private club with a swimming pool and the beach, of course, and everything. And my parents used to drive there. I would see a tent. Every time we would go by, a tent, an antenna for the television inside the tent, and a Mercedes parked outside the tent. And I was wondering. And I asked my parents, I said, who are these people that they are living in the tent? They said, they're the Libyans. They're living there. I said, why can't they go and live in a house? So that's the way they're living. And I said, well, okay, what's this with the Mercedes? Not the American ones, the ones that, you know, that they're about 4 or 5 meters, but a normal Mercedes. And I said, what's with the car? I mean, if he's a nomad or whatever, he should have a horse or a donkey or a camel. I said, no, they're rich. You see, before 1969, they were practically 10 or 15 families who were very rich in Libya. The rest of the country was very poor. Plus, of course, we had the illiteracy, which was a big thing because girls wouldn't go to school. I was one of the lucky ones that I went to school, and actually one of my aunts, who we don't have a big difference of age, I think she's 5 or 6 years older than me, that she was allowed to go to school. All my other aunts never went to school. After Gaddafi took over, his first order, I think, was that old people, young, whatever, whoever is illiterate is obliged to go to school. And for the old people, he made a special effort in every city, in every population where there was, they would bring teachers, the special teachers to teach them at least how to read and write and to sign their name.
Yeah.
Imagine my grandmother didn't know how to write and she learned by Gaddafi.
So... Gaddafi, obviously, he takes, I think it's the Green Revolution, was that what it was called?
Yes, it's Green Revolution, the Jamahiriya. It's right of the people or something.
Yeah, he takes his doctrine, he gets raises Libya up to very high levels of standards to where he's going to be rewarded, or awarded, I should say, by the United Nations for his efforts about a month before the attack on Libya. And
that is exactly.
Yeah, so we've got a guy that did a wonderful job during his life for his people. What is it? Because obviously there was dissent. I mean, it wouldn't have been so bad to where it would have been overthrown. But how does dissent get into a country like Libya that, like you said, all these people come to Jordan were anti-Gaddafi. How does it happen when you have a leader that's done so much for their people? What type of soft power was being used to dissuade or to persuade Libyans that Gaddafi was such a bad guy? Or what really happened in the power structure there?
Okay. We were under an embargo for over 13 years. In these 13 years, we lost a lot. And I mean, we lost a lot. We had no ability of building new buildings. We had roads and what have you. In these 13 years, we could have been the second Dubai or the first, depending how you see it. And we couldn't do that. So we still had in 2008, 2009, some roads that they were only from sand and not asphalt on the road. So that is one point. A lot of rather the ones from Benghazi, they were thinking that they were left out, that he didn't assist them very much, and a lot of things. Let me put it the other way around, though. It was not so much that inside Libya they were against him. From Benghazi, a lot of agents, counting also Qatar, also
Qatar, Jordan. Yes,
Jordan was also involved. Turkey was involved. Of course, always under the blessing of America. And they sort of try to manipulate the whole thing. In 17th of February of 2011, and prior 2 days to that, the protests were made for the prisoners of Abu Salim in Tripoli. There has never been a confirmation of these 1,200 prisoners that they were killed by the soldiers inside,
knowing the tribal nature of your country, Jordan, Saudi, it never happened. You just can't go kill 1,200 people because the repercussions would be terrible.
Well, Gaddafi never gave the order. That is one thing that I do know. But it's like, let me put it this way. It's like you have a company. You're the CEO and you have the people underneath you. You don't get all the information. You get only the most important information. The rest, it's done down by the little guys. Now, the little guys, if he hates my guts, he will do everything to get rid of me. So I cannot put all the blame on one leader who his subordinates underneath him do something else which is not under his control. That is one thing. Not that I refuse that these 1,200 people were killed. I don't know if they were killed. I haven't seen them, so I have no. I cannot criticize or give my opinion to it. I only get this information through what I read in and when I was living there. In Benghazi was always, since 1969, Benghazi was the last state that accepted Gaddafi after, I think, 2 or 3 years. I mean, he was in power in 1969. I think around 72 or 73, they accepted Gaddafi. So there was a little bit of a conflict. But not to the position or to the point of bringing down the government.
Now, did you guys within, because I understand first, did you spend some time with Libyan intelligence, either formally or informally?
Informally, in 2011, actually, I gave my I offered myself to them at that time. I told them I know what I can do. I offer this. I have the five languages in my back, and I can assist. And they needed all the assistance they could get.
Sure. Do they call it mukhabarat there also?
Yes.
So you offered, okay, to the Mukhabara. So at what point do you think that the leadership in Libya started to feel a little concerned? Because we were looking at it here. I saw Tunisia fall. I saw Egypt fall. I said, they're setting this up because now they can control both borders and flood the place with arms. And this place is set up.
That was the setup. That was the setup. And the late Ambassador Stevens had assisted very much in Benghazi. Also, a lot of MI6, the French agencies also. Plus, in Benghazi, they had hired the French agency, also private contractors. Now, the so-called massacre that they say that it happened, Jalil, the one who was NTC so-called minister or prime minister, admitted in 2014 that they were agents dressed like Libyans. There was no Libyan. No one was killed. On the contrary, they killed a lot of soldiers of ours. Sorry. That is when it happened. They only found out in 2014. The truth came out. One newspaper made a hell of a job was Al Jazeera. It was stationed in Benghazi. I know three reporters that I had a big fight with them. Word-wise, phone-wise, Twitter-wise, and Facebook-wise. One was apprehended, but let go after a few days, I think, because they were lying through their teeth. They were saying this and this is happening in Tripoli, and I'm telling them, actually, they were saying near the Green Square. I live near the Green Square, so I said, okay, how can you say that this is happening when I am there exactly on the spot and I don't see any of your reporters?
You know, this brings up an issue because I spend a lot of time in Saudi Arabia also, and they have real problems with Al Jazeera. As you know, the Saudi government is really upset about the way Al Jazeera goes about its reporting, if you want to call it that, and really involving itself in issues to just stir up emotions and involve itself really in the politics of foreign countries. Well, what you're saying is pretty much supporting what Saudi Arabia is saying right now.
Don't get me started about Saudi Arabia, please. I mean, Saudi Arabia is the worst of the worst. I mean, okay. Saudi Arabia taught Qatar what to do. Saudi Arabia is one of the biggest.
When did they teach them? Because they had like no relations from 2002 to 2010. When were they teaching?
That is what you say. They were always on relationship together. They always spoke with each other. What's his name? The prince of Qatar, the fat one, not his son, the Al Thani, the first one, always spoke with Faisal, and that I know as a fact. The so-called barking.
Okay, so let's take it back though. They're saying though right now that they are targeting Qatar, Al Jazeera for these issues. So they are correct though, are they not?
They are correct, but they are a few years late. Al Arabiya was doing the same about Libya. Al Jazeera.
I agree they're late. And I know, or I suspect that's because there are sea changes in the geopolitics underneath, you know, subsurface.
Not only that. Gaddafi knew too much. Gaddafi was a very intelligent person. I maybe not like him. I maybe and please don't mistake when I say I don't like him. I'm a person who hates authority. Whether I am in Europe or in Libya or in Jordan or wherever, authority for me is something that I despise.
So you could hang out with us on the beach in Long. You know, you'll be fine. You'll be welcome on the beach with us in Huntington Beach, California.
Okay. So you understand what I mean by authority. So Gaddafi for me, when I was young, from the age of 10 till 25, this military stuff and the authoritarian style wasn't exactly in my likings. But if I put it differently, and when I was discussing with one of the people who worked in the government, and he said, okay, you don't like authority, fine, I can accept that. Let me put it differently for you. You say you want to live in a country where there is freedom of speech, where is this, where is that, whatever. What do you think Europe has? I said, well, Europe is free. I mean, you can choose. You can say whatever you want. And he tells me, okay, let me remind you, when you went to north of Europe with your Libyan passport, how free did you feel? I said, actually, I was not allowed to go to certain places when they stamped my passport. Okay. And when you sued them because they did not allow you to stay in the country to finish your studies, what happened then? I said, I won the court. They allowed me to finish my studies, but then I was a person non grata for that country. With a Libyan passport, of course. Mm-hmm. So where is that freedom?
Yes, exactly. Freedom's relative.
Exactly. Freedom and democracy is just a word. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the difference between democracy and the military style, let's say, in Libya, is this. Gaddafi would say till 1980, I think 84, 84, 89, when he stopped governing and then the government took over. He would say, this is what I'm going to do. Didn't ask our opinion. In a democratic country, they ask us. They will say, let's take England, for example, about Scotland becoming an independent country. Do you remember how much they pushed the Scots through advertising not to vote against the split? Now, that's not democracy. So what they did, the democracy is we say one thing, but we do what we want from the behind. While with the military, you already know. Take, for example, North Korea. North Korea, you're not allowed to speak about the government. You're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to do that. You know where you stand with them. Now, if you want to be a partisan, you can do it. You will find a way. In the democracy, you cannot become a partisan because nothing will wake you up. They will come these advertisements, the spots that they will tell you, you know, we want the best thing for you. So we give our freedom up. Since 9/11, check how many freedoms they have taken away from each person in the whole of Europe and in the United States. You have cameras everywhere. You have listening device everywhere. You have even Google listening into you and taping you, whatever you say, whether you're talking about sex or whether you're talking about politics or whether you're talking with your friend about God knows what. Mm-hmm. And when they need it, they will use it against you. So where's the democracy? Yeah,
unfortunately, you're right about that. You know, it's just they fish and they fish and they fish and they throw out their big net. And when they need something, they'll just pull it out of the net and say, see,
exactly.
We got.
So what they do, the countries of Europe and the United States, they play false flags, continuous false flags. The unfortunate thing is, and this is what I wanted to write on my blog tonight, was, okay, we know that the agencies, all agencies all over the world, They play games. They play mind games. They use the people. They manipulate. You know that. Why do you fall continuously on the same trap? That I cannot understand. America had already had an Iraqi war and saw the results of it. And they go to war in Libya, whatever for, because they were going to lose the petrodollar and get the gold dinar. It's about high time. The dollar, it's just a paper. It's not backed with gold. It's not backed with silver. It's not backed even with copper.
It's backed with a U.S. military and thermonuclear weapons. That's what it's
exactly
backed.
Okay. Yeah. So that is the reason why they had to get rid. And of course, don't forget that Gaddafi pulled a big stunt towards the Americans and the English. Gaddafi was brought by the CIA in 1969. He was installed by the United States. What they didn't expect, they made the same mistake as they did with Castro. They didn't expect that it would happen with Gaddafi for whatever reason. I don't know. And in 1970 or 71, Gaddafi kicked out both bases, the English base in Tobruk and the American base in Tripoli in Willis. Kicked them out completely. Bear in mind, though, that the American government at that time warned Gaddafi that if he persisted to kick out Willis base, the whole of Tripoli underneath is with mines. The Willis base had mined the whole of the underneath of the underneath the ground of Libya, of Tripoli. And he said, go ahead, do that. Let's see what the result comes out. And that is how the United States moved to Italy. So that is something the Americans never liked. And that is, after 1971, the demonization of Gaddafi started. He's financing IRA, he's financing terrorists, he's giving guns here, he's doing that there, and the poor guy
was just sitting in Tripoli, just minding his own business. Everybody hang tight, it is Miriam Alpha, media, right up. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's The Fetch, rolling through 3 hours of intelligent media for the politically aware. Our guest is a native Libyan, I guess we can say. Her name is Miriam Al-Fatah. Her website is Libya Against Superpower Media, and you definitely want to go check that out. It looks like she was recently on Deanna Spingola's show. Is that true? Did you go on Deanna Spingola?
Yes, I did.
And how was the show? I'm trying to find.
Very good. Very good. I don't know how it turned out, but I was very excited and very satisfied.
Well, that's good. You've been making the rounds. You've been all over the alternative media as of late, from what I hear.
Yes, and that I have to thank Michael Goodrich. We talked after Nick Sparrow's interview, and with Michael we started discussing me writing a book, which I still haven't finished the draft, which I have to send him, but he offered to introduce me to all of you and to get the word out about Libya and what's going on.
And yeah, let's kind of like fast forward everything and what is going on. Obviously, you're familiar with Libya. How many governments do you have there now? I think there's two, correct?
No, three.
There is three. Okay. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a breakdown of the three governments and what they kind of stand for and where they're located?
All right. The House of Representatives is the one internationally recognized. It was elected in 2014.
It's in Tobruk.
Yes, is in Tobruk. They had to leave because they were being blackmailed by the militias or shot, or they had the gun onto their brains if they didn't agree to do what the militias wanted. So they decided to move the government to Tobruk.
Okay.
In 2014, July, Misrata, the most hated tribe, which is a mix of Turks, Jews, mind you, not the Palestinian Jews or the Libyan Jews, but Jews that I don't know from where they came from. Hmm. This is the mix of Misrata people. Misrata, to remind your listeners, are the ones who massacred all the black population in Tawerga and displaced them. Around 3,000 families next door village from Misrata. So these militias from Misrata and the Misrata tribe decided that it would take over captive the capital of Libya. Although they had come to an agreement with the other tribes in Tripoli, they did not hold the word, and they came in, they started shooting, and they burned the international airport down. My family escaped from this Holocaust on a military ship. Libya for Tripoli for 2014 till today, they are living very difficult as to impossible to live in. We have become Tripoli has become so occupied by two governments. One is the Muslim Brotherhood government, the GNC, and the UN-backed government with Siraj, who is installed by the UN, who has not been accepted, although they try to push and pull and do whatever to have him accepted, but he's not been accepted by no one. Although
Siraj is with the Government of National Accord, correct?
Of the United Nations. No, it's not of the National Accord. It's of the United Nations. It's okay. A UN-backed government. The National Accord is the one of the GNC, which is a Muslim Brotherhood, which no one wants.
So the Europeans, when they mapped this out, they put Prime Minister al-Siraj as head of the Government of the National Accord. This is from the EU.
Yes.
So that's...
That is true, and they're collecting money out of it.
Okay.
EU and the United States, they don't do anything unless they are going to collect something out of it.
Well, you know, business.
Exactly.
It's a dirty business, but business.
I know. And the thing is that nobody wants to wake up. They're still sleeping. And that is what gets me really off my rockers. And usually when I travel to Tripoli, I am so angry that I can barely speak out of anger.
Now, I know that some officials from Haftar's government, the government in
Tobruk.
In Tobruk, I was in the middle of Saudi Arabia 2 years ago, and they basically paid to get me out to come fly and meet with them for some issues also because of my relations here. That was rather interesting. They have, I know, represented here, I think in Dubai, UAE. But these guys are, how is Haftar? Isn't he part of a pretty big military organization?
He is the long hand of the United States. He's an CIA asset. Mm-hmm. He is not accepted by the people. But we, how can I put it now? We put him in front because he's the less dangerous than the other two that they are in Tripoli. And we can control most of the time Haftar's movements. Haftar as a whole, although America is trying to install him as president in Libya, they even sent him, how do you call these people, that the image maker, to dress like Gaddafi, to speak like Gaddafi, to walk like Gaddafi. And wherever Gaddafi has been and however he traveled, they have used the same thing for Haftar, so that
you're talking like they're almost creating a Hollywood caricature to try to mold people into believing it's back to the
old
days.
Exactly.
Interesting.
You only have to watch. How can I say it? If I send you by email some of the pictures of Gaddafi's visits, and the same pictures of Haftar to the same places where he visited, where Gaddafi had visited, you'll see the resemblance. You understand what I mean?
I do, actually, yeah. There's other players there, of course. You know, obviously Libya has a very large reserve of very beautiful oil, if I'm going to use a Trump phrase there.
Water.
Controls who and water, yeah. Who controls the petroleum facilities? Is that Ibrahim Jadran?
House of Representatives.
The House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Most of it's under their control. And very few, I think, I may be mistaken, but very few oil fields are under the control of Tripoli. I don't know who the main players on the oil that they are playing, but I know that most of the oil is under the control of the House of Representatives.
And that would be the Tobruk government.
Yes. Okay. You see, all the Libyans have accepted the House of Representatives, and they have not accepted the other two governments. Now, in Tripoli, it is like saying that Amman, which is the capital of Jordan, is held captive by two other militias.
Yeah, like if we had some tribe in Erbil and some tribe down south in Karak controlling the two. Something like that.
So you can understand. Yes, imagine now that in Tripoli, a lot of people, I mean, everybody's working normally, 9-to-5 jobs, and they can't get paid. There is no money. The banks will not give money out. Now, either you have to go with a check or with a credit card, but money isn't flowing. And Tripoli is starving to death. We are talking about Tripoli of 2017. Imagine that till 2011, before the bombing started, we didn't have one homeless person. Mm. We didn't have one who was starving. We had a lot of refugees that we gave them jobs, and they didn't travel to Europe. We dissolved the refugees, and when I mean dissolved, we didn't kill them. We had them, we put them into work and everything.
Yeah, you absorbed them.
We absorbed them completely. And let me put it this way, the other way around. Gaddafi was a man who had balls. I'm sorry for the expression. He stood up, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, Iran, America, Europe, and NATO for 8 months. 8 solid months. This man stood up. And we didn't have any new ammunition, no new airplanes, no nothing. We hadn't changed them since 2008. So what we were fighting, NATO and all these military people that they were coming in, we were fighting them with old guns, not with new ones. Mm-hmm. And if NATO hadn't bombed us 24/7 for 8 months, this would have never happened. The rebels, the so-called good rebels for the Americans, I can't remember the name how they used to call them, they couldn't get an inch if it wasn't for NATO. NATO, Red Cross, Doctors Without Borders, all these betrayed the Libyan people. And I'm talking about the people, I'm not talking about the military. What the military does with others who have the guns together, that's their problem, they get killed. It's something that you understand. But innocent civilians, that I cannot forgive, the Red Cross and the Doctors of Free Border and NATO altogether.
Medicine Sans Frontières is making a mess too. They're running NGO ships now. They're basically flooding Europe and Italy with all kinds of, you know, this is an issue now that the Europeans who is?
Soros.
Soros is paying this. Yes. Okay, good. So it looks, because a lot of us believe that part of the reason they took down Libya was because they wanted, meaning Soros wants to take down Europe. And the only way to get to take down Europe was to take down Libya and take away the central power and control so that then all these migrants could come through and they could just ferry them over to Europe as if nothing happened.
I don't know. That is one scenario. And there is another scenario that Merkel had made a contract with Qatar to destroy Libya. I mean, you can hear a lot of scenarios playing around. I mean, each one has his own interests. You hear Hillary Clinton, she had her interests. There is also another scenario, was the one that because Gaddafi had financed Obama's election, and when I mean financed, he sponsored, I don't know what he did exactly, but didn't give any money to Hillary Clinton's group, and she held that against him. There are a lot of things, but one main thing was that Sarkozy was afraid that Gaddafi would spill the beans about his election and how he was elected. Another scenario that was playing in 2011 was that Qatar and France, they wanted the biggest chunk of oil, so they invented this war. But if we go back to history, or rather the one that it is already written by the winners, the bombing started only when all oil contracts were null and void. Had the contracts been, let's say, in April, NATO wouldn't have bombed. They would have waited. And the war wasn't only for oil. There were many, many factors. Oil was one. The gold-backed dinar was second. The water that we could supply water for Africa and Europe for another 50 to 100 years. Planting also the Sahara, making it like Palestine or like the Israelis did in Palestine, make it green from desert. That would mean for a lot of NGOs and people who were exporting to Libya, they would decline, their businesses would close. So there were many factors why Libya should be destroyed. It's not only for the refugees to come over. And mind you, these refugees are only Africans. There are no Syrians coming.
We know that. Yeah, we know that. This is all, it's not even Libyans. It's sub-Saharan. Like, we heard the other day, Haftar is shooting at NGOs now, warning shots, saying, get the hell away from us. We're tired of this mess as much as some of the Europeans are. We're tired of this mess equally.
You know, actually, the one who isn't tired is Italy, because Italy now, with the blessings of Siraj, is going to colonize Tripoli again. And really? Although they are against, yes. Yes, it's they have already, their ships have they are in the Bay of Tripoli. And it is something that all Libya is against the Italians. We don't want the Italians back.
For reasons we can understand, knowing history.
Not only that, do you know, and I have not seen it in any tabloid or newspaper, that Gaddafi had succeeded to get the first installment from Berlusconi for damages that the Italian colonizers did in Libya.
Well, that's news too. I didn't hear that one. See,
yes,
you're bringing news today. That's good.
He was the first man, president, whatever you want to call him, that he succeeded in making a country like Italy telling them you have to pay damages to Libya because you stayed from 1911 till 1945. The amount, I don't know how much it was the amount, but I know that they collected the first installment just before the war. Now, imagine if the rest of the countries like Africa, Nigeria, Algiers, and all these other countries that they were colonized by the French, by the Dutch, by the English, would turn around and start asking compensation from England, from France, from Netherlands, and you name it. Mm. That would destroy Europe. Europe and America is on the brinks of collapse financially, economically. People do not want to understand that whatever taxes they are paying just to hold the banks up. If people would wake up and take their money out of the banks will disappear. Rothschild will unfortunately have to feed the banks and start giving back because he's the one who's getting 99% out of all this money out. Mm-hmm. So Gaddafi, to me, whether I liked him as a person or not, that's beside the point. The guy, he took a poor country, made it to one of the richest countries, educated his people. We maybe didn't like some things, but find me a human being that will be satisfied with whatever it's been given. I mean, you go to a reception, a wedding reception, and you will hear the gossip saying, oh, the meat is too cold. Oh, what did she do that? Why did you put that there? I mean, I could do it better. Nobody's satisfied. And from 2008, Gaddafi had already started building, bringing God knows how many. In 24/7, it was Libya was under construction to become one of the second tourist attraction of Africa. In 2012, they were going to give us, they would give the new international airport, which would have been by United Nations and by European standards, one of the biggest airports in the world. Even big. Sorry.
It's okay. We're listening.
So this is why the reasons that Gaddafi had to go.
So where forward now? We got about a minute and a half left. Where forward for Libya today?
Excellent. Well, unless the Libyans wake up and join all the tribes, I don't see light.